Eddie, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our warm-up speaker, David.
My name's David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
I still wasn't 100% sure I was going to be the warm-up speaker. Maybe at the last moment you'd pick somebody else. Let me set a timer because last time I did not. There we go. So experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. My experience was that I always kind of felt apart from rather than a part of. That was my own doing. I didn't really know it at the time. Both my parents were school teachers, and I overheard them talking about the teacher's pet, how they all did, in fact, have their favorites. They weren't supposed to. And I was like, ooh, I could be the teacher's pet. And so I worked my butt off to be that smartest kid in the classroom. And whenever the teacher picked, I'm like, ooh, pick me. And the teacher would say, now, David, we have to let other people answer a question. And when they did, I gave them the stink eye for stealing my glory. And for some strange reason, being a jerk like that, kids don't like you. I don't know how that happens. But, you know, I was well-deserved, not the favorite kid in the classroom. And that kind of went for a long time, right? I was always apart from. When I, fast-forwarding to 2009, things had gotten bad, and I ended up home alone, unsupervised. I was unhappy, and so I turned to alcohol to numb the pain, so that I wouldn't have to be present in my own self. There were parts of my life where I could socialize with people over the internet, right? That kind of a long distance thing. You're keeping people away. You could play games over Skype. And that let me stay at home. I didn't have to drive and drink. But, you know, for the little bio break, I could run off and, you know, drink some and then be back in front of the Skype playing with my friends. And, of course, the drunker I got, the more screenshots they took. But stuff got tough. And by about 2014, the effects of heavy drinking were apparent. I had the shakes. I had that foggy brain. I didn't know I had a foggy brain, but I did. And my employer, my boss, gave me the employee assistance program pamphlet and said, dude, do whatever it takes. And a short time after that, they marched me out the front door and said, don't call us, we'll call you. I did end up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the first thing that happened was, well, let me step back. I ended up in counseling, and as I'm telling my tale of woe to the counselor is getting a little bit more happy. With every word that I speak, this smile is growing on her face, and I'm a little bit annoyed at this, to be honest. But after the initial session, she's like, oh, well, you need AA. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what I need, but thanks. Well, when I did show up here, it was wonderful. I walked into a room of complete strangers, had never seen any of you before. And I know some people, they're worried they'll show up in a room and they'll see people. I didn't see anybody I'd ever knew in Visalia. But what I instantly ran into was people with smiles on their faces, and they would shake my hand and say, welcome, we're glad you're here. There was I had managed to immediately prior, drink way too much, trip over a rock, face planted, had a golf ball sized thing with stitches on my forehead, and I looked a delight. And people were, one gentleman here, he walked up and he said, you know, pardon the language, but he said, "What the fuck happened to you?" And I said, "I fell." And he said, "While drunk?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you're in the right place." But the friendliness and the genuine care that people had, that was instant attraction for me. And so when I showed up here, I instantly wanted to come back for more. I wanted what you guys had. You were friendly. Here I am, a complete stranger, and the fact that you would just be open and welcoming, that was a level of connectedness that I'd been missing for a long time, and I loved that was here. I was prodded to get a sponsor quickly, and I did that. And my sponsor said, "One of the things that really helps is getting into service." And so I started doing as many service commitments as I could. Did the chip guy, did the literature. I loved being the literature guy. Started going to H&I at the six-month mark. Because the one group home, they wanted at least 6 months of sobriety. I don't know why. I mean, that first week, I would have been raring and giving people all sorts of terrible advice. But everything about showing up here was inviting and hopeful to me. As time went on, what I realized is, I think the biggest value is, prior to showing up here, my life was a little bit purposeless, and one of the things that's built into AA is that 12th step, carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, right? Me being a newcomer, I needed people who were willing to walk up and say, "Yes, we've been where you are. We have found a way out. We've got a plan. We've got a book. We've got steps. You're going to need a sponsor." And so there's value in just being who you are. You have the experience that people can identify with you. A newcomer can say, "I've been where you're at," right? It didn't take any super skill for me to walk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And just because I was a newcomer, I can be someone that other people can identify with, that other newcomers can identify with. I think that's a really powerful thing that's here in AA. Recently, real quick, I've been on a happiness kick. It turns out a friend of mine, she did meditation in Albuquerque, and then her teacher got on a podcast, and so I started listening to the podcast, and it's this guy on meditation. But lately, he's been doing things on happiness instead of meditation. A couple of interesting things came out of stuff I've been listening to. One is that happiness is a team sport. And I really like the fact that having a sponsor is built into AA, right? That sponsor is going to help guide you to becoming happier. And everything that I've done here does make me happier. I've got a routine every morning, right? The book says, "On Awakening, Do Things." And one of the things I've been doing is every morning after I wake up, I say my prayers, my third step prayer, my seventh step prayer. And then I have to come up with three unique things I've never been grateful for in my life ever before. Every single day I got to come up with three things that I'm grateful for that I've never been grateful for before. And that just starts the whole day really makes me happy. I would have had none of that if I hadn't have got into the rooms of AA. I'd have still been trudging down the road to misery, or I'd be dead by now. But I'm out of time. So there we go. Or apparently not. You know, you'd think a computer guy would know how to run a computer. That's my job. Thank you. My name's David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks, David.
I'd just like to thank John for stepping up and speaking for us this evening. Our young lady from Fresno called and canceled. Alrighty, and let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our featured speaker this evening, John.
Oh, I see what's going on.
Hello, everyone. I'm John Alcoholic.
Hi, John.
Well, know that I wasn't your first choice tonight, okay? Oh, whatever. Yeah, so guys, it all started in the feeling of being dysfunctional or a little bit maladjusted. It started in the sandbox over at Sendell School in kindergarten.
There it is.
There it is right there. This is the cause of the problem. What it was I was, of course, had brought my Tonka truck to school that day and was in the sandbox and all showing it off, you know. It was a big old Tonka truck and one of those dumpsters. And I was real happy about that and really proud and being an asshole about, you know, to the other kids and whatever, showing off my new truck and stuff and showing everyone how cool it was. And I remember one kid got up and he got this big old rock and smashed it. I go, what the fuck, you know? And I didn't know. I thought, you know, there must be something wrong with me. I mean, why would he do that? You know, why would he smash my truck like that? And that idea of there's something wrong with me has stuck with me for a long time. And not until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous has it been able to be removed for me. I know I'm a little bit diseased, have a little bit of a disease of alcoholism in the head, but I know that. You know, I have ways to treat that disease and those character defects, you know, with the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the traditions. I know that for me, the life today is much better through the teachings of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, my sobriety date, because of what I've been able to got, that my able to learn today and what God has shown me, is my sobriety date is 9/6/86. Got all these sixes in my head, but the so it's I got this new life today, which I've it's been increasingly getting better and better every year as I've been getting sober. It's just grand nowadays. You know, the thing is you know, I was just talking with others about how my current living situation is kind of been kind of tough with the my wife and I got married 10 years ago. And we have had a house like together for 9 years, and this new house, and we have had two or three individuals move into the house, which is my stepdaughter and the two grandkids move in. So, but it's been kind of crazy, and that little bit of insanity is just goes on and on every day. But you know, I was just thinking, life is the best it's ever been right now. You know, it really is. And the thing is, you know, for me to have that type of attitude with what's going on at home is just amazing. I came to AA after my first DUI back in 1984. I was drunk Thanksgiving weekend and up there at Fresno State. And went partying my butt off one Saturday or whatever, and was over at a party, and we were in Clovis, and going over to Clovis. I used to think that the stop signs on Barstow were kind of stupid, the ones between between Cedar and Chestnut. There's all these stop signs, you know. You go a little bit, and then the stop sign. All these continuous stop signs, you know, for no reason at all. It seemed kind of stupid for them to be there. And I was drunk off my ass because I had gone to the scoreboard before then, and I was pretty loaded. So I went out to Clovis, my buddy's house over there, and Aaron used to live over there on a Bullard and wherever. And so I decided to blow through all those stop signs. Right there, I said, "Oh, this is dumb. There's no traffic. You know what the hell?" So I just blew right through them, made straight through over to Clovis, no problem at all, you know. And after doing some outside issues, I was able to come back. And I after that stuff, went over at his house and drinking some more. And I blew through the stop sign at Chestnut. And I guess the cop said that he was out there at the stop sign ready to pull out. And he says, lucky he didn't, because I'd have blown right into him. And he said Chestnut, it crosses, went near there, near the big Chestnut crosses Barstow. And it's a little bit low. So I said I got airborne and I was just throwing sparks out from in front of my car, you know, when I bottomed out. And had no idea what was happening. I was in a blackout. So he pulls me over at the farm and gives me the sobriety test. And because of this other stuff I'd been doing, I was able to do the finger test faster than he did. And he goes, "Oh, he's pretty impressed." So he just busted me for having a hemp marijuana pipe on my gear shift. And I remember I was talking to one of my genius buddies and saying that I used to say I should order a urine test if you get busted like that, you know. And so I was just going to pay a fine for having the marijuana and the pipe. And so I started, but I demanded a urine test. And he said, "Okay, well, sure, you can give me a urine test." And the thing came back with a DUI attached to it. So that was kind of shocking. And I told my dad, and he had Claude R., who has a street named after him, one of our AA members who was passed away. Claude came out of the house and 12-stepped me and took me to some meetings in Farmersville, the sobriety celebration. And where they used to stomp and shout and make lots of noises for 90 days of sobriety and giving out chips or whatever. Where's the basket? I'm sorry, I didn't contribute to the basket. The basket, the seventh tradition. There you go. Sorry, a little hiccup right there. Back to the Claude. Claude came out of the house and took me to some meetings, and I didn't think I was like those guys. I was 24 years old in the nursing program at Fresno State, and I was going to be a nurse in a couple years, and was in my first semester of the nursing program and failing, of course, that first semester because of my drinking. And, I thought, you know, I'm not like these guys at all. No, it can be like you, like Mike, you know. Those guys like Mike were there, you know. So, you know, of course, you know, I thought I was not like you. And so, of course, I started chipping away. I passed that semester and started drinking again up in Shaver Lake and away from home. They didn't know I was drinking, but I was up there working in the restaurant up there and drinking away. And got back down to Fresno for the next semester and proceeded to get my second DUI. And that was an accident. And he came out to the house and said, so I plowed my face to the steering wheel of my truck and was, I had gashed my right eye and almost tore my nose off. So I was looking like someone else talked about the, bump on the head. Dave was talking about how he had the bump on the head. Well, I had a, looking like an ogre. My right eye was, my whole face was swollen up this far and my right eye was a line. So I was looking pretty cute. So, he says, "Well, you know, the, courts go much lighter on your sentence if you get treatment before your court date rather than after." And I said, "Well, then let's get sober." And so I went to treatment right then and, withdrew from the second semester of the nursing program and tried to go back to school the next fall. And, but the thing was after 6 months, you know, I'm going to meetings again or whatever, I thought again, like I wasn't as sick as you guys. So I started chipping away at outside issues and wasn't drinking, but I was doing other stuff. And life was, I was going to AA, getting my court card signed. I had a court card after I had signed for a year. But, you know, I had to get real with the group and get real with myself because I was living the lie inside and outside of AA, and that's terrible. That's just wears away. It's real bad. It wore away at my self-esteem and my, I thought I was supposed to be getting better in AA. I thought, you know, here I saw people around me getting better and feeling good. And I was, you know, talking the program or whatever like that. But inside, I was just feeling like shit because I was living the lie. So what I had to do was I had to get real with the group, and they said, well, you know, we knew something was going on with you, but we didn't know really what it was, but, you know, welcome back. And, you know, someone else David talked about the hugs and the welcoming that he got in AA. So important in Alcoholics Anonymous, so important. And I hope that, you know, people can carry on that act also. That's the way of being of service, I think, also. You know, when you welcome an alcoholic or anyone new or anyone in AA, and you shake their hand and say, welcome, keep coming back, and, you know, glad you're here. Because, you know, the guy at the Sierra Sky Park, which used to be out there on Herndon and Brawley, out on Herndon, on the west side of Fresno, used to be a little airport. There used to be a little hangar there. And used to be a great meeting on Thursday nights. And a guy who also has died sober, but he is a great old-timer, Ron H. One time we were, I was rambling on about, you know, how shitty life was and how, you know, poor me and whatever at AA meeting about maybe 9 months in sobriety and riding my bike to the meeting back and forth because I was without a car. My first 2.5 years of my sobriety, I was up in Fresno still and working, I withdrew from the nursing program by that time and was feeling like shit because I'd done that. And of course, and working minimum wage jobs at, you know, whatever else, you know, who would ever hire me. And, riding bikes to and from AA meetings. And I was kind of a little bit angry, you know. And I was, a lot of profanity in my shares. And he, one foggy night, you know, after the meeting, he, I was all bundled up getting ready to ride back to Clovis because I would ride from there to Clovis and back and, to three meetings a week on a regular basis. That's one thing I really think I got pretty good in the beginning was consistency with my meetings. You know, I went to three meetings at least a week, you know, in and out. I'd go week in, week out. I'd go to Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday nights, you know, on a regular basis. And I really think that going to committed meetings is important because that way you get some people get to realize who you are and, you know, they get to really know about your story. But anyway, back to Ron. Ron, in the, you know, I was all bundled up, and comes by, and he goes, gives me a hug. And he goes, you know, I understand where you're at, you know. You know, we want you to come back. Please come back to the meeting again and keep coming back. And, you know, I know where you're at, and life will get, and it'll get better. They said that a lot back then. They said it'll get better. And probably after my insane shares, you know, how crazy they were, they said, well, it'll get better, John. And insane, sooner or later. But and it did get better. It's gotten better tremendously. But Ron said that to me, and that was the first time really that I really realized that somebody understood me, you know. No one had ever really given me a hug and said like that and said, you know, I know where you're at. I know you're pissed right now, but it's going to get better, you know, and hang in there. And, you know, for someone like me to be pissed off and really not knowing, you know, which way was up. I know I had to go to the meetings. So I had that court card, you know, I had that sign, you know. Because I remember one time, real quick, another thing over there at Northeast Fellowship where I used to go to meetings also a lot, over there on Pulaski, which had a low ceiling, and there were still smoking meetings back then. You walk in the room and be like a fog of cigarette smoke, you know. You have to, like, bend down to see who was there. So, you know, I remember going to those meetings and I would, people would say, keep coming back, John. And, I got up and I said, you know, I fucking got you, okay? I got the court card. I'm going to be showing up here whether or not you say that or not, okay? So don't have to say it, okay? To me every time, all right? I'm going to come back because I got the court card, right? So, you know, shut up. And so, you know, that kind of stuff. Again, angry. And, a few other profane words were in there, but, you know, I just, and they laughed, of course, and you know. But you know that the hugs and the understanding and the caring in AA is so important in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, so important, David, like you said, you know. Because I know that welcoming a person that's, you know, lonely in AA, you know, lonely and trying to get sober and really confused about what this thing's about. Because I didn't know anything about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, because when I came into AA, I thought the meeting was mainly what was said in the meeting. I thought the meeting was just talking, you know, people sharing and what's going on. They talked about the big book, but of course, you know, what I thought was, you know, the program was what you portrayed, the way you walked in the rooms, the way that you carried yourself in the room. Was I thought that was Alcoholics Anonymous right there. I didn't know that Alcoholics Anonymous was in this big book, you know, and that the program was here until probably, you know, a year or so into the program up there. And then I started working with the sponsor, sincerely, and started working the steps. Then I realized that the program of AA is in the big book, you know, and the it's not what's said in the meetings. Most times it is. But sometimes in the meetings, it's a little bit off, you know. So, you know, if you want to really know what the truth is, read the book. Because I know that for me, the you know, reading the traditions long form is good. Was good for me also. I was looking at this right now. It's open on the traditions right now. So I was looking at the long form, and you know, the long form is the original script or the original text of the traditions. You know, the annotated version is are the 12 traditions that we normally read in meetings. But the thing is I know that for me. I also want to talk about, you know, the love I've felt in Alcoholics Anonymous. The love that I've been given and the love that has been shown me in AA is what's kept me coming back and also made me feel worthy, you know. Because in AA, I felt worth, and when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt worthless, okay? Worthless. And over the years, through the teachings of AA and through, you know, working the steps, cleaning up the records of my past and present, you know, but present by doing the 10th step, of course, I've been able to feel a little more worthy. And that is a great, great thing for a person that's a, you know, low self-esteem individual like me that came into these rooms. Because like I said, when I came in these rooms, I felt bad, you know, and I didn't really know what was wrong with me. You know, I didn't really know I had the disease of alcoholism, and I didn't know that I had character defects that I could work on, you know. But my sponsor, of course, by working the steps and peeling away the onion, you know, and figuring out what's going on with me and what my character defects were and how I could straighten those things out through via making amends or and praying to God, praying to a higher power to clean these things up, you know, or to take these character defects away, I was able to improve my life tremendously by doing that. Talking about taking these character defects away, you know, the sixth and seventh step were things that I really didn't do in the beginning, because this in the beginning I went to a men's stag up there for the first 5 or 6 years. It's called a specific problem solving meeting where people present a problem at the start of the meeting. It's an hour and a half meeting where they present a problem at the beginning of the meeting and people share on that subject regarding that problem as to how they solve that problem similar to that in sobriety by working the steps. And a lot of that stuff was by making amends, you know, and working that eighth and ninth step. But, you know, also the things were that, so they really talked about the inventory, you know, for the fourth step, and then the fourth and fifth, and a lot of the eighth and ninth step, you know, and some 12-step work, some service work. But they really talked about the fourth and fifth and making the amends a whole bunch. And I missed the portion about six and seven totally, you know. I thought, well, I knew they were there. But I thought they were filler, you know. I thought that you were really, you know, just make a dozen, you know, make a dozen steps. So I thought they were like filler or something like that. That they just threw in there just for things to make it 12, you know. But because what I'm telling you is I really never worked 6 and 7, you know, in my sobriety, and until probably, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years ago, yeah, I think. And, you know, I worked with Tom C. from Porterville about this, the 6 and 7 step, and really got on my knees and really sincerely, you know, asked, you know, my higher power to take away my character defects, you know, and that really helped a bunch in my recovery. And my, because I was going through, at that time, I had gone through a breakup with a girlfriend of 11 years. A few people in this room know the person, and you know, that kind of shell shocked me. You know, I was in meetings a lot and crying a lot back then, and you know, because I was lonely again, and of course, you know, alone, and I didn't know that, you know, there was a God with me all the time. I didn't really realize that, but there is a higher power with us, and He's in these rooms. And the thing is you know. You know, thank God for, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, and thank God for showing me the power, the higher power that I choose to call God. Because, you know, the thing is it's, when I came into these rooms again, I didn't have a God. But through the teachings of Alcoholics Anonymous and the love I've gotten in these rooms and the fellowship and the welcoming, you know, the hugs, whatever, from Ron first and others afterwards, you know, and the unconditional love that I feel in these rooms and the things that I get in AA without even asking are just, you know, monumental. And I know that my higher power is with me today. So, you know, for that, I'm truly grateful. And, you know, but like the love I've been shown in AA is, you know, I was talking about that before, is you know, my mom, both parents have died in sobriety. Mom died about probably 2012, I think. Or no, 2007 she died. She died in 2007. And a few months before I met Sandy. And her death was from cancer, and both parents were on hospice. And Mom just withered away because she was without any food or water intake for the last 2 weeks of her life. She was a rail when she died. And skinny as hell, and I remember going to the meetings and saying she's starving, you know, and being sobbing at the Springville gut level, you know, Thursday nights, because I used to live in Fortville back then, and being distraught and sobbing. And the thing is you guys would, you know, hug me and say, it's going to be okay, John. You know, I'm sorry for your, you know, sorry for what's going on, but, you know, we're here. No, we're going to be beside you. And you held my hand and you hugged me and said it was okay. When I was, you know, just, really distraught. And so the thing is, but then when the service happened over there at the Congregational Church, the big church where the Hillman House is right in front, where we have our AA meetings, 11 women from AA showed up, you know. And some men showed up also, but Cheryl H. and her entourage from Fortville showed up, and God, you know, I mean, how amazing for people from AA just to show up and support me, you know, and be there. And, you know, Julie and Cindy and others and Phil and Shirley, and it was just a wonderful group. And, you know, the support that I've gotten in AA, all the important events I've had in life, I've had AA members be there in my sobriety, you know, my wedding when I married Sandy out there at the ranch, you know, had, you know, Danette and Alan were there and others, and we took a picture. That's so funny. We took a picture at the wedding, you know, we're all the AA members. We took pictures of the wedding, and we're all. It's funny. All the people weren't AA members. We're looking at go. They're looking at me. Who's that group over there, John? I go, those are my AA friends, you know. And I tell you what a bunch of smiling faces it was, you know. What a great thing it was just to have my AA friends just all in arms and to be there with me at a time like that, you know. And with Sandy and I. Sandy is a gift from God. Sandy is, I'm going to start crying. Sandy is a gift from Mom, because we were out there spreading her ashes over there in the harbor, over there at Provincetown, which is on the tip of Cape Cod, where the last city on the right there on the tip of the Cape. And we're on the back of a barge back there, because my aunt went out there to the end of to this barge, and they're out there partying in the back, and I was sitting out there in the front, just, you know, sober, of course, and just thinking what my life was going to be like, you know, later on. And I said, well, you know, if you can hook me up with have me meet someone, you know, and put someone in my life, we really appreciate that. And I made a decision right then and there to, you know, because I hadn't been really, you know, seeking. I've been 4 years without that girlfriend that I had broken up with from before, and I mentioned. But, you know, I said, you know, please, God, place him into my life. And 2 months later, Sandy and I started going out, and, the rest is history. But, it's a wonderful lady, and she's been, you know, truly a gift to me, and it's really been a great life, a great treat, great ride. But, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has put others in my life too, you know, like, people who give of themselves and who just are, you know, without looking for a payback at all, you know. Because before, you know, you look at my old friend, whenever you would do something for friends, or more or less, whenever I would do something for friends, I would be looking for payback, you know. I'd look at, you know, like, well, you owe me, sucker, you know. And these AA people don't do that, you know. They don't do that at all. You know, I had a time today where I was able to get some help from an AA member, and they do tons of stuff. And I just, you know, I'm truly grateful for that, too. And I've never, and they've been there for, and AA members will be there for you, too. The membership will be there in times of need. And that is so, the love that I've been given from AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and the members of AA has been just, you know, constant. And by that, I'll close with this. By that, I feel a part of, like David was saying, I feel a part of, you know, rather than apart from. I'm inclusive. It's an inclusive society, Alcoholics Anonymous is. Inclusive, totally. So, you know, if you want to be a part of, and if you're new, welcome. You started a fun journey. You started a great journey. And I know that for me, it's been truly a blessed journey for me, because I've been able to stay sober for a few days now. And I'm, how long am I supposed to go, Rick? Until 9:30?
9:25.
What time's it now?
Whenever you can. Whenever you want to put it.
Okay.
It's your meeting.
It's my meeting. See, Mike? Told you. It's my meeting. So I got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Service work. David talked about service work, and the thing is, remember one time I was to share at a meeting over there in Cambria. Not Cambria. It was Cambria. And I talked about service work one time in a meeting over there at the Kingsview building, when the meeting used to be at the methadone clinic, when the meeting used to be over there. And people really liked that, and they asked me to come up there and speak about service. And I went all the way over there, and they put myself and my girlfriend up there in a room, and I barely talked about service at all. During my pitch, I just blew it, but, you know, I don't know what brought that up, but, you know, Dave talked about service work and how important that is, you know. My sponsor, when I got Dennis up there in Fresno, had me at 6 months, had me secretary in a meeting, you know. And I took a meeting over there at in the first 2 years of my sobriety, probably first 2.5 years, whenever I could, I'd be secretary in a meeting. And sometimes I secretary two meetings. There's lots of meetings up in Fresno. Lots of meetings, so they need secretaries. But a few occasions, I would be a secretary of two meetings. But, you know, I was a secretary at least one meeting, like for the first 2 years of my sobriety. You know, after 6 months. And I tell you, that is one key thing that is key for me. What I think kept me sober, because by being a secretary of a meeting, you know, and being in service, I was able to be a part of, you know, and be able to be a part of the group. And let you know that, because they know what's going on. If you go into a meeting week in, week out, you know, that almost forces you to get to know people, you know. And for a person that's, you know, a kind of a self-centered asshole like me, you know, you tend to get to know people that way, you know. You can tend to go to lots of meetings, and you meet people like, you know, Gary, you know, like Gary that I met up here in Visalia, you know, years ago, you know, and Steve. I remember my apartment was over there, right over there right near the depot. Rick and I were talking about the depot earlier on about there's an apartment complex just north of the depot, and I had an apartment there. And I remember newcomers coming over there and sharing with me. And I tell you, I was sponsoring people and. Sponsoring a few people, I remember. People coming over to the apartment and sharing with me, and just sitting there in the living room. It's a little shitty apartment, but it was just a neat deal where people would come over and talk, you know. And you know, by being of service, by making yourself available, you know, you realize, you know, it's being service work and doing sponsorship gives more to the sponsor sometimes than the sponsee. Because, you know, the thing is by, it's not, and when they say work, you know, it's not really work. It's just, you know, doing the deal, you know, and doing part, and the 12 step work is, part of the 12 step is carrying the message to alcoholics who need help, you know. So, you know, by doing that, you know, I was able to see the light in their eyes, to see the eyes light up, you know, to see the people get it, you know, to see people go, aha, that's what that means, you know, or to see them a day later, or see them after they've done some work, and or see them after they do an amends, you know, and see how it works, and see how they, and look at they, and see how they feel. You know, the cleansing power of working a ninth step, you know, and making those amends, or the cleansing power of just doing service work in general, you know, is amazing, because what it does is that makes you feel, again, for me, worthy, you know, when I said worthy, because, you know, for a person who had that Tonka truck smashed in that sandbox, like, what's wrong with me? Why do people pick on me like that, you know? You know, and, you know, before I realized I had some character defects that were kind of blaring, and to have a change like that, to have like a 180 change, you know, to have that feeling of being worthy is amazing, you know. All due to my higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. It's not luck. It's not just a thing that just happens, you know. There's a process, right? You work the steps, you gain a higher power, and, you know, you go to meetings, you know, and you try to do the best you can. It's not a perfect, there's no perfect way to do it, you know. There's not a, you know, like a bar that we have to go over, you know, like a hurdle. We don't have to go over the hurdle. We can plow into the hurdle if we want to, you know, right? And stumble and fall flat on our face. But if we get back up and keep on trying, that's the key, right? The key is not the achievement. The key is to keep on trying. The key is to keep on getting up. Because the thing is eventually you're gonna run like a gazelle, you know. True. I mean, I think that's a pretty good analogy. But you know, the thing is that for me, the service work has been tremendous. You know, people talk sometimes. I kind of scaled back a little bit since the marriage and stuff, but. Because, you know, there's a guy from over in Visalia who talks to who I had helped me out with some stuff, and he talked about a balance, you know, having the balance between, what's that? Reyes. My friend Mark. And the person who gives of himself. But Reyes would talk about balance, you know, and we talked about balance a few times in depth, and, you know, giving my wife some equal time, and giving my wife not immersing myself in Alcoholics Anonymous like I used to, was kind of a balance I had to achieve, you know. But, you know, life goes on, and life is, you know, I had to achieve that balance and try to. Not, you know, short Sandy, because, I mean, she didn't marry me because of for AA. She married me because for me, you know. She married me because, you know, whatever. But I'm her husband. She's my wife. And the thing was, I had to balance that time I was given to AA, because I used to sometimes, you know, leave the house and, you know, whatever, and I had to give that a balance. And so I wasn't, I didn't really realize that in the beginning until I heard Reyes talk about it. It helped me tremendously and Sandy and I have a better relationship because of that, you know. It's been strained a few times, but, you know, it's, you know, we love each other tremendously still after 10 years, which is a real neat, you know, neat treat. The service work for me was just, you know, a saving grace for me, because, like I said, again, it made me feel like I've given something back to AA that I keep on giving back to AA. And even throwing a buck or two in the basket is service work, you know, for me. Because, you know, the thing is that when we do that, we help keep Alcoholics Anonymous running. Because, you know, we can't run on fumes. Alcoholics Anonymous has to, you know, have support. And we have to be sure that we... be sure that the doors stay open for the next alcoholic who comes down the road, even after we're gone, right? after we're gone, you know, there's going to be more alcoholics coming in the rooms. And if we short the basket, you know, when it goes around and pass it, when we got like a few bucks in our pocket, a guy we can spare, it's just Alcoholics Anonymous runs on fumes, because we run a very efficient association considering all the work that we do. We do it for very cheap. So please understand, the money doesn't go to waste at all. If you put a buck in the basket, it goes to a good cause. So with that, I appreciate everyone being here tonight, and hope I was somewhat coherent and able to share. And thank you.
Thanks, John.